couple of my students have, you know, said that, you know, hey, I, you know, went through the course, I learned how to build mobile apps myself, and now what I'm doing is outsourcing the talent or the service that I have now to build other people's mobile apps. And I'm like, you're a genius, because that's, you just created another source of income for yourself.
Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Culture members, this is another episode of The Culture's Money. As usual, I am your host, Jamal Vitos, but others of you may know me on other social media platforms as Leo Grand Prince. By every is that you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate for financial literacy, generational wealth, entrepreneurship, and the culture as a whole. I'm very excited to have a Black brother at the table. The ladies have really been giving y'all gems for weeks and months at this point. And I've been wanting to bring the brothers on more. It's just been scheduling issues with other people and everything like that. But I found this young Black brother, fellow brother, on Instagram looking for content for you guys. And he's in the tech field, app development. And I thought that that would be something that would be dope to bring on to have a discussion about, for him to tell you guys how he got into that, what the industry is like, and everything like that. So I would like to introduce you guys to Mr. Jabray Jennings. How are you? So, yeah, give him a little feedback of,
you
know,
how you doing? Hey, everybody.
What do you do before we kind of, you know, chop it up, Brayley?
Sure, no problem. So, you know, like Jamal said, my name is Jabray. I am a tech entrepreneur slash co-founder for a couple of mobile apps. And I got my start when I recently graduated from an HBCU, University of Maryland Eastern Shore. And I was working down at the mayor's office of employment development here in Baltimore, Maryland. And I had an idea for a mobile app, but I honestly didn't have any type of background for it. My major in college was sociology slash social work. So I was about as far from technology as you can possibly be. But I just had, you know, I just had a interest in it. And so I did some research, learned to code on my own and decided to create a couple mobile apps. And they had some great success. And then after that, I decided to.
Bro, you learned to code on your own from scratch?
For others and start my own tech startup.
Yeah. Another guest of mine, Asia, who's in the tech field.
It's definitely a journey. Like, I definitely will say that.
Once she hears this episode, she's going to be beating down your DMs because she wants to get into that type of thing. And I hear coding is very daunting for you tech people.
Yes. Yes, it is. The thing about it is a lot of people think, you know, it involves a lot of, you know, math and a lot of numbers, but more so it's just about critical thinking, you know, and just analyzing and, you know, because most of the software is going to do the math and the crunching the numbers for you. You just have to be patient and definitely very.
So I saw one of your, I did my research before we got on. I saw one of your apps is called Caption Any Photo. How did you get the concept for that?
Yes, great question. So when I was, I think after I graduated, me and my college roommate had went back for homecoming 1 year. And while we were down there, you know, a lot of people would go back to homecoming and take a lot of pictures and things of that sort. And this is kind of like when Instagram was at its peak. This is before the timeline.
Oh, wow.
Was ancient. In shambles like it is now. This is back when it had chronological order and things of that sort. So we took a picture. Yeah. Very, very ancient. So we took a picture and I was about to post it, but I had a issue of, you know, that's back when the caption was so important, you know, like the caption depends on how many likes you'll get and the engagement, all of that sort. And we just sat down for honestly maybe 15 to 20 minutes and couldn't think of a caption. And it baffled me because it's like, this shouldn't be that hard. Like, social media is supposed to be fun. And then I started going around asking people like, you know, are they having the same issue? And they were saying, yeah, during that whole weekend. So on the drive back, home from homecoming, I just thought, like, you know, there should be an app for this. Like, this should be something convenient, some type of utility app for people to use just to kind of, you know, make social media fun again. And I looked in the app store and there was nothing similar to what I was, the idea that I had. So I sat down and said, you know what, let me just write out some frameworks. Let me just polish basically the idea up and let's see if it's something that's really worth, you know, getting into. So after that, I kind of created like a Twitter poll and see if people would use something like that. And then honestly, once I guess maybe like 95% of people said yeah.
And you said that
that's all I need.
You didn't study tech or, you know, computer information systems in college, but were you always like kind of a techie or interested in technology growing up?
You know, I would say on like this last year, if you asked me, I would say no. But after sitting there thinking about it, like just about you know, video games, those are things I was into when I was
young. Bro, you really taking me back with the throwbacks.
Back when my space was around, when I was in middle school or high school. Yeah, so when back when MySpace was around, I used to, you know, design people's MySpace pages. It's for like little to no money, you know, like $10 to $15 a thing, things of that sort. So, you know, and honestly, MySpace, when you were on that platform, we were coding. We just didn't know it, you know, back then, because that's not what we were really interested in. But we were doing HTML and CSS coding back then. But it just all looked like the Matrix to us. You know, we just wanted to learn how to put music on our MySpace pages. But yeah, so that's kind of like my first, not official job, but that's what I started doing. And then now I look back, it's like, you know, I always had an interest in that. But as far as technology wise, I mean, yeah, I would have never, like, if I had told my
kids. And you just talked about something that kind of sparked me. So you said, when I used to change the color of my MySpace and all that, you saying I was coding?
Yeah, so that's called, when you change the background of your MySpace page, that was basically HTML and CSS, which are two coding languages that are used typically when you're creating websites. So every website you see, it's going to have HTML, which is most of the content that you'll see, and then CSS is more of the design thing. So
let me ask you something good, because it sounds like
just the outline.
I've had a couple of people on it. It always seems like what their careers develop out of is something that they were doing just randomly as a hobby or something like that. So you're saying you were doing people's MySpace pages, and now you're up here developing apps. Is that kind of crazy to you?
It is because it's such a big gap in between, you know, because it wasn't all the way technology all the way through from back then to now. You know, I went to college for sociology, social work, because that was what my passion was at the time. You know, I wanted to help people. Just growing up around, you know, my grandmother was a social worker. So, you know, just being around her a lot of times, you know, she taught me, you know, the importance of helping people and just getting understanding of learning people about their culture and things of that sort. So I went along with that route for a change. And then once I got, you know, out of college, I said, you know, I still have an interest in sociology. But I was like, let me see if I have an interest in another field as well.
And so tell me how it, I see that you pivoted into
where I'm at now.
Helping other entrepreneurs develop an app to grow their business. How does that work? And where did that service or that willingness to go in that route come from?
Sure. Yeah. So after I created my first mobile, don't capture any photo. And once it got the media traction, you know, then we started receiving requests and invites to go on TV and do other podcasts and other type of content and interviews. A lot of people started reaching out to me saying, you know, I have ideas also, you know, how do
it
I get
always
started?
Shocks and you, right?
I wasn't prepared for the amount of people that were really interested. It is. I tell people, I say, you know, you never really know how many people around you have business ideas or, you know, or just plotting on something until you do it. And then they reach out to you. Like once I did that, people I talked to on a daily basis said, you know what? I always had an app idea. And I'm like, bro, you never told me that. Like, we talk about everything under the sun. We've talked about sports, video games, anything. You never said
deep.
That you had an app idea. But in his defense, neither did I. So it's like, you know, this is one of the things that we never really shared. So it's like, wow. And then once that happened, you know, I started taking, you know, consultation calls and doing things like that, you know, helping people out. But honestly, the demand got too high. It was, like I said, I was still working, you know, my 9 to 5 at the mayor's office. So it's like, I was taking calls on my lunch break and then taking calls when I got off. And it started to get to the point where it's like 10 p.m., 11 p.m. I'm still, you know, taking 15, 20 minute calls. And I was like, okay, it has to be a more productive way to do this. So that's when I started creating like a little ebook that, you know, basically had like the frequently asked questions that most people want to know when building an app, like, you know, where to find developers, how do I find an app idea if I don't have one, and things of that sort. And then it went from there. So I was like, you know what, more people are hands-on. So let me actually develop a online course that goes through every single step, you know, hold your hand almost every single way to tell you how to develop an app, either through building it.
Talk to me about coding, or you can do it with no coding. You can build an app like that.
Yes. So there is technology around now that you can build an app without coding. And what it is, it's a website, but it's basically a online platform or module. And what you're doing is just inputting and dragging and dropping where you
now,
want
with that, is
certain
it,
certain content, is it, certain
just
features
to give the
to
listeners some context. Is it less crisp than the coding?
Mm-hmm. It's honestly, it's not less crisp. Put it like this. You wouldn't be able to tell. If I showed you two apps, you wouldn't necessarily be able to tell which one was built without coding and which one wasn't, just dependent on the visual. It would be more of the content and functionality. Like if it was an app regarding that needed FaceTime or something like that, you would know that that has to be built with coding, just because there's some type of features and functionality that's going to need to be maintained on a daily or even hourly basis. As far as a no coder,
so
that's
more complex the features or the mechanism that you're trying to do, coding is more likely your pathway. Whereas is there something that's less complex or, like you said, less needing an update on a daily or hourly basis, you can kind of do the drag and drop thing.
Exactly. That's it perfectly. You know, so if it's something like I said, you know, FaceTime or some type of complex app or like a Instagram or Pinterest, that's something that has to have daily maintenance, you know, just to make sure that everything inside is working correctly. But if it's something simple, like maybe an app for your e-commerce store or app for your business, okay, or even just mobile.
Talk to me about the industry.
Children,
and it's funny, I didn't know you were in Baltimore. Like, we're going to have to like do happy hours or something if this pandemic ever let us outside. but tell me about the industry in Baltimore, specifically your field. Is it a growing industry? Are you on the ground floor at the infancy? You know, talk to me about that.
So here in Baltimore, you won't find, it's not a big tech industry. I figure if you had to pick somewhere in the East Coast, I would say right now it's probably North Carolina is where the tech industry is kind of emerging here on the East Coast. And the reason I say it's coast dependent, because everybody knows, you know, Silicon Valley, you know, Palo Alto, San Francisco, that's where all the tech giants is. Basically, you know, if you want to do tech, you get out.
You say North Carolina, you mean the research hub,
right? Just like they tell you, if you want to do movies, you got to go out to Hollywood. Yes, yes.
The Triangle. I think it's the Triangle. Riley, Charlotte.
I think it's the.
I forget the other one.
I don't want to get the name incorrect. It's the Underground. Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. So you're pretty, you know, you have some basic knowledge of it, just like myself. But yeah, that's where I think the hub is here on the East Coast. It's definitely North Carolina. Not really much here in the DMV. I'm just, you know, Baltimore is more of a financial tech and medical
so
tech.
So where do you see the industry growing?
That's been emerging.
In regards to your career and what you want to do, do you think you'll stay here because you can build it out on your own, or eventually will you need to, you know, branch out into one of those areas like North Carolina or Silicon Valley?
Right now I'm doing pretty good here and I would like to stay, you know, as close as home as possible, but like, you know, like you said, the opportunities in networking are limited. Just for, you know, example for, my first app, you know, once that started gaining traction, I got calls and people say, you know, this is something that, you know, is really taking off. You need to move out to, you know, San Francisco. This is where the opportunities are, you know, if you want to grow it and sell it or things of that sort. And I was just like, yeah, I don't think I can just up and leave, you know, everything I have here and just move out there off of a, you know, just off of a phone call. And you just telling me like that there was no guarantee that you're telling me like this is the correct path. You're just telling me that this is the area that I need to be in order to network. I just couldn't do it at the time. And honestly, it's like, you know, I don't want to go and just be another little fish in a big pond. You know, if I could do something for technology station from here in just this DMV area and kind of make this a tech hub, I would love to do that, because, you know, there's more people like me in this city, in Virginia and DC, that are probably interested in technology, but they don't know how to start it or, you know, where to even begin. And if we could start something here, like some type of program or something like that, I would love to kind of be involved in that.
It's funny you say program. Do you see yourself, of course, the pandemic's kind of in the way with this. When the schooling starts opening back up, to kind of helping the kids in Baltimore mm-hmm. City and the DMV mm-hmm. area who wouldn't normally have, whether it be for funding or just lack of programming in these schools, introducing them to technology and app development fairly early.
Of course, of course. You know, that's crazy you said that, because right before the pandemic started, that was one of my visions. You know, I wanted to, because the school year is about to end, so that was around March. And I told myself, I said, you know, if I could start with maybe doing some, you know, summer programs for some kids, helping them, you know, learn the basics of coding or just learn the basics of app design, you know, and see what their interest is. And if it piques their interest, you know, just do something going into that full school year, and then maybe partner with a school program and just, like Baltimore City Public Schools, partner with them and just be able to offer some type of program.
That's dope and dope, man. I definitely agree with the last point you make. I feel like Baltimore has potential, it's not known for technology, but with people like you and a couple of the other young ladies who are in tech that I've had on the show in the past, if would just get in on the ground level and build it out, I think it would be a great aspect. To kind of pivot a little bit, talk to me about the financial aspects. As with my listeners, is a financial literacy program. I always want to talk to them about, people think that getting in tech is always expensive. Talk to them from a app development. How, what's the low end that you could get in? What's the high end that maybe, is it depending on the features that you're looking for? How do you bootstrap a app launch, basically?
Right. No problem. Yeah. So the low end, I always tell people, you know, you can start for as low as possible. And especially now that they have the platforms that are the no app builders. And when you go on some of these no app building platforms, they'll let you build out the app completely for free. So you can build it out for free for, I think maybe it's some programs, it's 21 days to a month. So you have 21 days to a month to just do anything on the platform and implement all the features of that sort. The only time that they require you to pay is that when you want to launch it and make the app live. And the reason you have to pay is going to be because of the hosting and server fees. You know, with any, I think almost close to any technology you have now, you'll have web hosting and server fees to store your servers. Kind of like, you know, when you buy a website, you know, that's going to need a domain and a hosting fee, whether it's GoDaddy or any type of services like that. And the server fees, it's going to be based off of the data used and the number of active users at the moment that are requesting and pulling the data. So, you know, starting out, it can be very low to maybe $70 to $100. But the more users that you have and the more data, the server fee grows. And I always tell people, like, you know, you can't be scared of paying a server fee that's $500 to $1,000 a month, because it's a good problem to have. Because if your server fees are that high, that means you have
a lot of active users. So when you say $70 to $100 to start off, is it, and you can find how much are they charging per user? I can never break down. I've seen stuff where they say like CPM, I'm assuming that's click per minute or click. The jargon's a little lost on me. Can you just kind of clarify that on them?
No problem. Yeah. So CPM, that's more of the language that's used for when it's an ad. So CPM sometimes is click per impression, meaning the amount of people that have seen this one ad. For example, you know, they have ads that are video ads that it show at the end of normally an end of a video, a game that you play. Like when you finish a level of Candy Crush, you'll see an app there, and they'll do CPM, which is the click per impression. So depending on how many people see this, that's what the app company will be paid from that marketing company. And then, yeah, and then you have banner ads, which are the small little ads across the full bottom of the screen that just sit there throughout the entire app, no matter which screen you go to. And those are paid off of click per impressions also, but those are paid off of per thousand. That's one thing they don't tell you. So it's paid off of, so if you have 10,000 views on this, you're paid by the thousand. So you'll be paid 1,000. And depending on what that CPM rate is, normally it can be from 5 cents all the way up to $2.50. And you know, that the math just balanced out.
Okay. Once again, I see that you started some digital products. And I know they've become, especially in a pandemic where people were trying to figure out how to supplement, you know, being locked down, not being able to go to work. What insight would you give to people who may have a skill or don't know if a skill is monetizable? Like how would you advise them to launch a digital product and, you know, put it out there and bring themselves to market?
Yeah. So once, you know, when I was doing the ebook initially on, I ran into just network and I ran into someone said that they were doing an online course. And once they told me that, I just thought of just like, you know, Strayer University or something like that. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I have the time or the, you know, financial obligation to delegate to that. And they're like, no, you can just, honestly, it's super easy. So my first course, what I did was it was completely free to do, which I loved. I downloaded Microsoft Word. I typed up whatever I needed to go in it. And then I just edited it using Canva, which is also free. And then once you have that content, you can just place it on different marketplaces. Like I use Gumroad.com, which is they have a free program, but they also have the program that's $10 a month. And so, you know, when you're starting out, I tell people everyone in this world right now has something valuable valuable information that someone would pay to get from you, you know, any type of knowledge. And, you know, even if you have 15 years in customer service, you know, you could write an ebook or a guide trying to help someone secure a job in customer service or become a customer service manager. And they would pay you $5 to $10 just for that information, you know. So just as long as you would be able to market that and provide that value, you're able to
so how does it make it feel, because I've seen you so great post testimonial of your students or your clients, you know, you helping them launch their, you know, app or helping them scale their sales. How does that make you feel?
Honestly, it still feels a little surreal to me, you know, when I get the text or the email saying that, hey, Jabri, you know, we just submitted our app to the App Store and it's, you know, waiting on the review. And then once it's reviewed and, you know, launched, I just feel like it still feels a little surreal, because it's like, you know, I never thought that I would become an instructor or teacher of that sort to help someone. But I was just able to, you know, have be blessed, you know, with this information and with, you know, the creativity to think of this. But like I said, it's surreal. And it's also a great feeling to know that, you know, I helped them launch this mobile app, which can now generate revenue for them and be able to help them and their family in whatever type of situation they are, or able to just scale their business.
So with all, you know, these, you know, I see a lot of us, you know, the culture, which I'm so happy taking advantage of, you know, technology and scaling their business and making more money. But the financial literacy parts to me is always lacking and kind of scary. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what you would advise people to do if they have extra income? And are you a person who believes in like 401ks, Roth IRAs, stock investments? Come for me from that angle.
Yeah, so I do, you know, believe in the 401ks, and the stock market is something that I've gotten to in this year, just with the pandemic. So, you know, the last few months I've gotten really big on, you know, financial literacy, just finding ways to, you know, build assets rather than liabilities. Just because, you know, early on in life, you know, just going through traditional schooling, they tell you go to college, get a job, get a house, get a car, and basically live and just work like that. And that's a lot of liabilities that they just tell you to grab initially, just to kind of feel like you quote unquote made it or live in the American dream. Like, they don't tell you that a lot of the times, a lot of people go to college and take out
$100,000
loans and graduate with a $40,000 job. Like, that doesn't, you know, there's just that no one tells you that, and that doesn't balance out. It's just crazy, you know, that's what they push on us. And then, you know, once we're in debt, then it's just, they just tell us to figure it out from there. And just, you know, being in the business side, I'm just glad that, you know, I was able to kind of get out the rat race early on. So, you know, now I'm just trying to help people. Like I said, if I can help them create an app or just any type of services that I offer and able to help them kind of step out of that rat race or just build assets instead of liabilities. And, you know, one of the things that's really funny about college is that when you go to college, most of the time you're 17 and 18, and they tell you, you know, when you sign up for your student loans, and they say, okay, we're going to give you, you know, between $60,000 to $100,000 to finish your college
career. I've never thought about it like that.
What your major is when they give you all this money? So it's like that right there. Yeah. So that right there, it should be a red flag. Like, someone's giving you $100,000 and then not asking you, you know, what you're going to do with it, what you're going to major, how are you going to pay them back? They just know that you're going to pay them back. Like, they don't, they don't worry about that. Like, they're like Uncle Sam, they're going to find a way to get their money. No, no ifs, ands, and buts about it. And then on the other side, if you was to try to go and secure a small business loan for $10,000, they would probably ask to see a 30-page business plan. And it's like, that doesn't, That doesn't make any sense. So you won't give me $10,000 without a thorough
with
business
no
plan
guarantee
and asking what
that
I'm
I'll
do
be
this
able
money.
To pay
but
this
if
money.
I go to college, you'll throw $100,000 at me. No guarantee that I'll finish college. No guarantee that I'll be able to pay this back. So that's kind of, yeah, that's one of the things.
Definitely,
you know, that's one of the things you see once you're, you know, once you're older and you know, actually take a step
speaking
back.
Speaking of that, I've spoken to a lot of tech people. I know the money in tech is high. Like, is it sometimes hard to be financially disciplined when the money's coming in so fast? Do you find yourself having to be more structured than you were even before? I'm not assuming that you weren't a structured person before, but is it one of those tempting things because tech is on the rise, becoming in high demand? Is it easy for some people to kind of get drunk with the flush of cash?
Of course. Yeah, of course. You know, when any, like I said, any type of lucrative field, you know, that money, once the money comes in, your mind starts turning like, oh, I can get this new car or I can get this new TV, new house and all that stuff. You like you said, you have to be disciplined. Like, you have to realize that, okay, yeah, this is coming in now. And granted, I would like this to come every month, every year. But, you know, you have to think that if this does stop, will I still be able to afford this lifestyle? And if the answer is no, then, you know, you just have to budget properly and make the right investments so that if this does stop, you know, that you have that backup plan or another type of asset that'll pay for
replacing brick and mortar for retail and other people who would have, you know, storefronts. Is that do you think apps are going to go in that direction?
Currently, right now with the pandemic, that's exactly where it is. A lot of my new students and customers have been people that have had brick and mortar stores that had to, you know, unfortunately, you know, close their stores because of the COVID pandemic and the quarantine. So they were able to transition over to a mobile app, which didn't stop their business. It actually, you know, kind of brought them to new customers and gotten more eyeballs on their quote unquote store, which is the mobile app, just because the screen time.
Give me a prediction. In 5 years, what do you think the app industry will be?
In 5 years, I think platforms will be more popular than people that code. Just because, you know, the traditional or the average person will be able to build a mobile app without any knowledge of coding. So once, you know, everyone gets aware to that, you know, they'll be able to start building their applications without coding, just using the drag and drop builder. Now, you know, I'm not saying coders are going to go extinct. You know, I definitely hope not, because I wouldn't have a job. But I'm just saying you'll see a lot more mobile apps being developed, just more of this mobile apps that have, you know, basic simplicity. Like I said, like the e-commerce store, just games or restaurant menus for things of that sort. You'll see a lot more of those just being built by entrepreneurs that already own the business that just have time to do it, or they'll still be outsourcing that type of work.
I'm a believer in it. I see it in my industry all the time. I can give people financial knowledge, but they're still willing to pay me to do the work because they just don't want to do it. And even with the drag and drop, do you think that will create a new industry of non-coders to come in and have a business where they're just building people's apps for the drag and drop industry?
It already has. It honestly already has. Well, a couple of my students have, you know, said that, you know, hey, I, you know, went through the course, I learned how to build mobile apps myself, and now what I'm doing is outsourcing the talent or the service that I have now to build other people's mobile apps. And I'm like, you're a genius, because that's you just created another source of income for yourself. You just literally created a side hustle for yourself from something that I didn't plan for it to go that way, but you just kind of made me pivot, and now I have to start thinking about that outlet
or
that
so
different
dope.
Avenue.
Generally, we wrap up the episode by I tell my guests to tell the listeners, give them one piece of advice. And for you, I wanted to be tech advice because you're in the industry, you're in app development, so I want you to focus there. And then once you are complete with that, give them your Twitter handles, your coursework. We all about the promo here. Like, run it down for them. Tell them where to reach you.
No problem. So one thing of advice, like I said, I always tell people is like, don't quit. I know it's typical, but it's like, you never know what's going to happen. Like, I've always heard the quote, you know, if you're going through hell, why would you stop there? You know, you don't stop when times are bad. You keep pushing through to get to that other side. You know, it'll get better. You know, I know it's a typical thing to say, but you have to keep pushing. Like, you know, I wasn't always making money from my mobile application. When it first launched, it was days where I didn't see any downloads. It was days where nothing happened. No one opened the app and things of that sort. But I just kept pushing through. I kept thinking of ways to market this.
Let them know them struggles.
Of course, for free, you know, because like I said, I was still a broke college student. So I started still thinking of ways to market this. You're not, they got to know. Still thinking of ways to do organic marketing, you know, ways to reach out to people, ways that I could make this app and company better. And once I just kept pushing through, man, the ideas just kept flowing. And once they kept flowing, I just kept capitalizing.
Never all taking right. my we foot definitely off. Appreciate that. Let them know your websites, social media handles, and any resource that you feel as though is useful to the culture and the public. Let them know where they can find that.
Sure. So my Instagram and Twitter handle are the same there, Mr_BYOA. And that stands for Build Your Own App. And that's you can also dope. Get
let me let you know that your episodes and bios for my Twitter or my Instagram. You just gave me the title right there. We definitely appreciate you coming on. As
I love
usual,
it.
We always like to thank the guests.
I love it.
Sharing some time with us because they could have done something else, but they thought not robbery to spend some time with us here at the money table to discuss things that could inflect your life, help you build generational wealth, and help you build other revenues and sources of income. This has been another episode of The Culture's Money.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.